The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
9:26 this Friday morning, and we have in studio Ethna Shortall. Good morning, Ethna. Nice to see you again.
Good morning, Ryan. Thank you.
Your third novel is called Three Little Truths. The books have taken off. We'll talk about that in a second. But you know, we would have known you down through the years as a journalist, hacking away like all good journalists do. But the books have brought you to a new place altogether. It strikes me as though you're living the novelist's dream.
Is anyone ever living the novelist's dream? At the moment, it feels like, yes, it's very good. I mean, when I started writing this book, my third book, I was writing a different story and it didn't work out. And I spent months writing it and only to scrap it after, I think, 7 months. So that didn't feel like the dream. But now that I wrote a book I wanted to write and it's done well, and it's doing well, the reviews are good, it's, you know, it's having its success as it comes out. And I feel like the others continue to do well as well, the first two.
So it's good. It's a good news story, isn't it? All things told. But even better news is the little man outside who I had the
Ruin.
Pleasure. So tell me about him. Thank you for letting me hold him.
Well, I wanted to get a photo because I was thinking when he goes to school, I was saying you need to still be presenting the toy show so that he can say to his friends, oh, look, when I was only 6 weeks old, I met the presenter of the toy show, so there. He's great. He's only 6 weeks. His arrival was pretty dramatic. He had issues in the womb. He had stopped putting on weight. He was very small. He was full term, but he was still only 5 pounds 11. And it was a proper emergency delivery, C-section. And I was just in for routine checkup, and his heart rate just plummeted, and so they had to take him out there.
What's that like when you're hearing this news through, you know, masks and?
It was awful. I say, and I still sort of get my head around this, but I say that the day he was born was the worst day of my life, because I don't really associate with him. I didn't see him until the next day. He was taken to intensive care straight away, and it feels like the experience of him being taken out of me, which is what it felt like, not really birth, is entirely separate from him. You know, they're two separate incidences. I kind of wish his birthday was the next day or something.
Do you really? Because it sounds, as you're describing it, that it was not chaotic, but it was traumatic.
I thought I was going to my mum's house that evening to have a curry she had made at 7 o'clock, and I was not. I was having a baby. Like, his dad missed, Ruin's dad missed the birth, which is terrible for him. I mean, I feel like I missed it. So the whole thing was, it just happened so quickly. I mean, it was brilliant and it had to happen, and I'm so grateful to the staff at the Rotunda for getting him out. And I want to give them everything. They were amazing. But yeah, it was very tough, and he was in intensive care for a few days, but he's doing great. Like, he's thriving, as they say. He's put on loads of weight, and they're not worried about him
anymore.
I'm
just struck, as a wordsmith like yourself, that you choose your words carefully, and to say, as you said twice, getting him out.
Yeah.
But
it didn't feel like a birth, you know, because it was, look, people have different kinds of C-sections, and there are different kinds of emergency C-sections, and I just didn't know it was coming. Like, I went into shock as soon as they said, we have to get him out now, and ran me through the hospital. It was, you know, something from the movies. And I was shaking. You know, they found it hard to get the spinal anaesthetic in because I was shaking so much. And I wasn't thinking there'll be a baby at the end of this, as you often are when you go through birth of, you know, and you think, okay, I'm going to get a baby. I sort of forgot about that because it happened so suddenly. And like I said, I didn't see him until the next morning. So, and then he was covered in tubes and he was absolutely tiny, and, you know, so it's kind of upsetting. But I'm getting better at talking about this, and I still haven't processed it fully, I don't think.
It was only a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. But because he's so great, I almost feel guilty talking about it being bad at the beginning, because it's so good now, you know? He's so good.
I appreciate that, but aren't you entitled to reflect on what was a difficult time without having to apologise for feeling a certain way?
Yeah, I know I am, and that's maybe what I'm coming to terms with, and I hope to write about it one day when I get my head together properly. And when there's a proper emergency like that, you go back to the hospital, I'm going back in a couple of weeks, and you talk with consultants and senior people about what happened and why it happened and things like that. So that's great, and I think that process will help as well.
When the dust settles. Yeah. Because what you produced to me this morning, when you put your little boy in my arms, was a trouble-free, you know, I got the easy bit.
Yeah.
A trouble-free, healthy,
he's very bouncing. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
and he sleeps and he feeds. So, I mean, what more could you want from a six-week-old, you know?
Yeah, it's a difficult time, Ethna. I mean, let's not talk about anything other than that. It was difficult. But like you say, you're through the storm, I think, in some ways. And as you say, that'll inform you. Because your books are very much informed on things that have happened down through the years in your life.
Yes, I keep taking things from real life and not always to the delight of people around me. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember when we spoke the last time, you talked about the difficulty in finding a house and buying a house and all the rest of it, which you ultimately
did. Yes, which we did, yeah.
And, you know, you talk about in your new book, which I think has this a lot of resonance with what people are doing. I think they'll really tune into it. For example, when you move into a new road, and it's like, I always say we're adults are children with wrinkles, and it's like being a kid going to a new school. And tell me about the phenomenon that's very much not part of our parents' generation, but part of ours, of the WhatsApp neighborhood. This is a thing. For those who aren't in one, tell us what it is.
Yeah. So Three Little Truths is it's about three new neighbors that move into a road. They've all moved in within the past year to this road called Pine Road.
Sure.
But the story is framed. Every few chapters is framed by WhatsApp correspondence between the women on the road. Have their own WhatsApp group. It was ostensibly set up to organize their monthly poker games, but really it's about the gossip and the goings on. And they're talking in the book, they're talking about the normal neighborly concerns, like they think there's a suspected rat infestation in the gardens, and who has a rat hole in their garden. Someone gets the Irish Times delivered every day, the paper's being stolen, and then parking. Now, anyone in Dublin knows that parking is an obsession, and like the road I grew up on, parking was a bit of an obsession. The road I now live on, parking is an obsession. And it's in the book, this is what they're talking about in WhatsApp, but mainly they're talking about the new neighbours that have moved in and why have they moved in and what's going on. Particularly one woman, Martha, moved in with her family overnight. Very mysterious circumstances. But originally my idea for the WhatsApp group came from my mum, the road I grew up on.
Yeah.
My mum and the women on the road, they have a WhatsApp group that is set up for poker and is about other things. Now, I have to say that the real women on the road I grew up on, if they're listening, are not in this book, and they're much nicer than these characters. I had to make them a little nastier and, just a little more mischievous to make it fun for fiction. But like the phenomenon of the WhatsApp group is real, I think, is in any neighborhood. Like we moved into our new house and we joined the Residents Association, and now I didn't join the WhatsApp group because I really don't like the constant pinging, but I got my boyfriend to join, and so he's in it. And again, parking is this, you know, regular obsession, and like it's just a way for all the neighbors to keep an eye on everyone else. And I just thought, what a brilliant way to frame a story, you know,
to give you
a taste of what's going on. And then beyond the WhatsApp group, we go into what actually happens.
Well, look, let's give your mum a shout out, because she has told you to stop staying. That it's based roughly on the road you grow. So look,
she made me change the name. Originally, I called it the name of my road, and she was like, no, I still have to live here. You've changed that name.
I have to say, I'm with your mum on this one, she'll make me a curry for this, I hope.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to. But anyway, we'll give her the break on that. But the WhatsApp phenomenon, to me, in some ways, I always refer to the tyranny of the ticks, because you talk about pinging. It's the ticking, because I have the sound muted on the phone.
Oh,
radio.
Yeah.
But the ticking, where the blue tick, the clear tick, did it deliver? Did you answer? Why aren't you answering?
I know that you saw it, so why haven't you written back?
Why haven't you answered?
You know?
So now you're developing an ulcer.
Yeah.
And then you have the idea of the WhatsApp group, then what do we all now have to respond to that thing, or that someone just said, or if you don't, are you aloof? You know, there's a whole.
Yeah.
I know, and
I do that as well. You have that. Well, someone like in the book, you know, well, I said this on the message group, but someone didn't write back. So this must mean that, you know, they hate me or whatever it might be. Like, I mean, you can read so much into it. Yeah.
I'd like to ask you about a difficult experience that you had on the late bus from Belfast to Dublin. It was a summer night, coming up to midnight, very late. And you were sitting reading your book, as anyone would be doing on a bus. Could you share that story with us and explain why you feel it was important to discuss it?
Yeah. So I discussed it originally in relation to the book. It was when I was a few years ago, and I was coming back from Belfast. It was late at night. I'd been to see a play, and I was on the bus. about halfway back to Dublin, and I was really engrossed. Can't remember what I was reading, but I was engrossed in the book. And the bus was bare, it was almost empty, and I had my feet up, no shoes on, just to make that clear, on the seat beside me, and I was wearing a short dress, and I guess, or wasn't that short, but I guess it had come up a bit on my thighs. Anyway, I saw this like light in front of me, just like something that caught a reflective surface, and I got a fright, and I kicked my legs in the air as a reflex, and a phone fell from between the two seats in front of me on the bus. And so I realised that the man in front of me on the bus had been filming my legs and up my skirt for, I don't know, a chunk of the bus journey. And I had actually heard him on the phone earlier, so I didn't know his name, but I knew where he worked and where he was staying that night because he was booking a hotel and telling them what company he worked for and getting a deal. But anyway, I kicked my legs and I saw the phone and I looked down and I could see the recorder was on, you know, and that it had been recording and I don't know for how long. And I got such a fright. And the thing that made me discuss this and made me write about a version of it is when these sort of, I call them minor sexual assaults. I mean, like, it's not, you know, the more grave end, obviously, and I wouldn't want to write about that because be comfortable.
You also you don't want to belittle.
Yeah, but exactly. But
yeah,
these minor ones still have an effect, and I think I describe them sometimes as commonplace. There are things like that happen to women, and they accept to an extent because if you dwelled on them, you drive yourself mad. And in that instance, if I was my friend, you know, advising, I would say, well, what you should have done is gone up and screamed at him, then gone up to the driver, kicked up and got almighty stink, got him thrown off the bus, which is what you should do. Everyone should do. I should have done. But I didn't. I got a fright. I took all my stuff. I moved to the back of the bus. I sat there shaking until the next stop, which was Dublin Airport, where I got off, which was not where I meant to be. And it was like 1:30 at night. Just needed to get off. It was fight or flight. And I think about, that was years ago now, maybe 6 years ago, and there's been lots of little things like that, you know, happened, that every woman has those stories.
Can I park for just a moment on that? Mm. Because you're probably recounting something that is happening to a lot of women, particularly listening in this morning. And your analysis of it is intriguing, because you're at one point saying, if I was my friend, there would have been a stand-up row, he'd been booted off the bus, and you really would have tackled it.
Yeah.
But when you stop being your friend in this putative sense, and actually you're yourself, you can't legislate or plan for the disgust and the trauma is too strong a word, but just the unpleasantness of it all, and you react totally differently to the person you thought you might have
been. It's the way you are, and like, I am not meek, you know, and I would stand up for myself often, but in those cases, I guess it's a protective thing, and you instantly protect yourself, and you do whatever that needs to be done. And
when did you realise that incident was utterly inappropriate and awful?
I remember a couple of, like, I don't know when it was, maybe a year after it happened, I was telling the story in a pub, like a fun story, this funny thing that happened. Then I realised, well, I wasn't laughing and no one else I was telling was laughing, and it wasn't fun. It was a terrible thing and it shouldn't have happened, and I should have done something about it. And it wasn't actually when the incident happened, it was when I was recounting it and I realised that the effect was still there, that I decided it was something worth writing about. And I haven't written about that specific instance in Three Little Truths, but what I have is this family that move in, Martha and her family. They've been through a sort of what I might call a minor sexual assault as a family, and you see how that affects them. Nobody did what they thought they would have done at the time.
Yes.
And then they're angry about this and they want justice, and then it manifests itself in all these different ways as it goes along. And I would say that, like, you know, in the book, it's only a small section of the book, much like in real life, it's only a small section. Like, that doesn't, I don't think about that very often, that incident, you know, because you just get on with things.
Yeah, but we call them micro incidents, or somebody does anyway. But actually they can feel much more macro in your head or whatever.
They fester,
They fester. And, you know, you could probably list off a number of incidents where you go, yes, somebody kind of did that and somebody else did that, and there's an acceptability to these things if you don't discuss them necessarily, and, you know, particularly for men, need to hear about how inappropriate it is, therefore we learn. I'm not trying to be
absolutely, and I, like, I'm writing that out, like in the book, the character that undergoes the brunt of this minor sexual assault is a teenager, and the adults in the book often are telling her not to be so dramatic about, you know, her reaction to it, but actually I'm on the teenager side, you know, really, and if she needs to be dramatic, let her be dramatic, you know.
Tell me about the rape list story that was from the national headlines.
Yes, so that was, it was a story in Cork, I think it was a year ago, maybe just over a year ago. There was a school, it was a secondary school in Cork, and a list had been on the back of a toilet door with... it said, I don't even like saying this out loud, but it said, the girl with the most ticks will be raped. And there was a list of girls' names. And someone, I think someone phoned a local radio station in Cork, and maybe their kid was in school or they'd heard about this. And then that's how it became a story. And so that I almost verbatim taken that and put it in the book. So that happens in the local secondary school. And that's one of the kind of scandals that the neighbours are dealing with, because the principal lives on the road and some of the affected girls, their parents live on the road. So that, like, there's the fallout of that. But I, like, actually, when I was writing it, I knew there was something real life in it. It was only after I finished the book that I went and looked up, and I realised that I had remembered it verbatim, the wording of what had been written on the back of the door. Yeah. Like, sometimes you do hear those things. They're passing news stories. I'd say that was only a story for a day or two.
Creepy, but horrible story.
Like, and you think, who writes that? But more you think, if you're a, like, that's another minor sexual assault. If you're a girl on that list, no one's touched you, no one's done anything. But it's awful to think that someone put your name on something like that.
But again, healthy to talk about it and to highlight it. There's a, in Three Little Truths, Edie is desperate to start a family, as you know. And I just think that this idea of the friends saying, you know, you can have fun trying.
You know, if
you're having trouble, yeah, but you can have the fun getting there. And this kind of expression or advice kind of made you groan.
In the book, Edie is, she's one of the new neighbours, and she has a seemingly perfect life, except she doesn't have a child. And her husband, who had agreed to have children, has suddenly gone off the idea. And so she's struggling with this. I mean, she can't have a kid on her own, obviously, and much to her dismay. And so she's putting on a front of saying, yeah, we're trying for a family and blah, blah, but actually there's no physical trying happening behind the scenes. And I was, we were getting pregnant, thinking about getting pregnant at the time that I was writing the book. Now, thankfully, I had a very willing partner in that. But I just remember talking to people about it, and people say things vaguely, like, I don't even think about it, like, you can have fun trying. And I was like, there's nothing fun about it. I mean, the act of sex before you're trying to get pregnant is one thing, and then when you're trying to get pregnant, it's entirely different. I mean, you're like, sometimes for now, I didn't have, like, it was relatively easy for me, thankfully, but I have friends who've, you know, they're on the strictest of schedules for months. I mean, there's
got to get home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Got to go. No, sorry, no watching TV. We have to do this now. I mean, there's no fun in trying for that, you know. And so I just wanted to represent that, someone that to the public facing says, yeah, everything's great, but behind they have all the stress of trying to get pregnant.
You know, sometimes you talk to an author, Ethna, and you say, so how much of you is in this book? And they say, oh, nothing, don't, please, I hate that question. You're all over this.
Yeah, but in little ways.
I know, I don't get
you
that.
Know, and so, and like, even, you know, stuff like that. Like, my mum, who was not, like, we were talking to her, was not so delighted when I told her it was based on a version of The Road. I gave her an early copy, so she just finished it a couple of days ago. Good. And she's away, but she texted me and she said that she loved it and everything. And I know that she genuinely did. And I think partly because she realises she cannot actually represent, you can't recognise any neighbours because they're not actually in the book, and so she's not going to be kicked out of her house. So,
that's all good. Well done, Ethna, this is a text, for bringing all of this up. The same happened to me on a Dublin bus 15 years ago. A man masturbated under his jacket beside me. I was in the window seat. I had to stand up, pass him. He eyeballed me. I had to get off the bus also, not at my stop. It was late for a night out. I didn't say it to the bus driver either. Fight or flight, like you say, and it became a joke later on that night out with my friends. You know, people sometimes so uncomfortable.
Oh, I'm so sorry with the grisly truth. Yeah, I'm really sorry that happened to that person. Those things, sometimes we write them off, and you need people to not write them off.
I think we could probably fill a show with these stories, to be quite honest with you. Ethna, congratulations on all your success. I know that Three Little Truths is a part of the BBC Radio 2 book club, which is
amazing to me.
It's a big deal. And it is amazing, but it's tremendous. But you earned it. You know, they didn't do it for the good of your health. So that's great. Congratulations on Ruan, who is an absolute joy and a pleasure to hold this morning. Thank you for letting me. Thank you for sharing. And good luck with it all. Congratulations on the new book. So it's all going on.
Yes.
Mind yourself, Ethna Shortall.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming to see us, as always. The time now is 9:45.